wise man. Typically, two options. We're going to guillotine him or we're going to spear him in half. We might just Superman punch him. We might just... He's a boxer, right? Floyd Mayweather. Floyd... I boxed Floyd Mayweather for 8 rounds. Oh, maybe one Superman punch. Break his jaw.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! I'm home!
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me!
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it. It's Sunday. You know what that means. It is episode 774 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for September 18th, 2022. I hope all of my listeners in Puerto Rico are staying as safe as they possibly can. I know they've got Tropical Storm Fiona bearing down on them. It could strengthen into a hurricane. So I know you guys are already dealing with a lot of rain down there, flooding. So if you still have power, hopefully you can use today's show to pass some of that time. And again, do what you can to stay safe. It's always very scary, but... hopefully you will all be okay. We have a lot to get into here this week. WWE stuff, AEW stuff, some NXT. And the PWI 500 is out. In case you couldn't tell. Always gets people arguing over nonsense on social media. So we'll talk about the PWI 500 and the one glaring omission from not only the top 10, but the top 20. In the PWI 500 this year. I couldn't believe it. I had to read through the list 3 times to make sure I wasn't missing this person's name. If you would like to get yourself a free audiobook, you know the drill. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You could sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. Get yourself 1 free book unless you are an Amazon Prime member. And then you can get 2 free books courtesy of this podcast. So go ahead and take advantage of that. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal link right there at the top of the link tree. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. All of our fine PayPal producers, including James Hollywood Herrera, who wanted to know, very simply, burger or pizza? Burger. In fact, I'll be having one for dinner tonight. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker, Nayef, Al Safar. You know, Paul, to go back to Paul for a second. Paul dropped a bomb on this podcast the other night. Raw was in Portland. Paul had a front row seat to the show. And he tried to get in a couple of sound off signs and didn't even make it past the door. They are very strict about that, I guess. At least in Portland. I don't know. I see people bringing all kinds of signs to all these other events. But at least in Portland, they wouldn't even let it get past the door. But Paul, thank you for the love this week. I appreciate that. Night Stalker, Nayef, Al Safar, Big B, Brian Becerra, Killshot, Keith Hart, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, John Raging Mad Riffle, he's raging mad every week. I don't know why he's so mad. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Shin Superkick Akuma, Russell the Muscle, and a very happy birthday to Neil in North Carolina. Hey, if you're tired of watching people overreact when doing food reviews, you need to check out the King's Reviews on Instagram, at King's Reviews. He does daily food reviews, including theme weeks, and this week coming up is Magic Spoon Week, now through September 23rd. He's reviewed other things like cotton candy flavored mints and flaming hot Cheetos mozzarella sticks, which sounds awful. But I would watch him review it, him better than me. So check him out. You never know what he might review next. Maybe he can get his hands on some of those pastries from Mindy's Bakery since Punk was wolfing them down like it was his last meal before heading to the gas chamber. At King's Reviews on Instagram. Yeah, you know what he should do? You know what he should do? The Packy One Chip Challenge. I was in Walgreens the other day. They had a whole stand-up display with nothing but bags of the Packy One Chip Challenge. I could feel a rash forming on my arm as I walked by. I had to get out of there. I would never do it. But I think that would be very entertaining if he did the Packy One Chip Chat. I just put that out there. I just put that out there as a suggestion. House of Glory is back at the NYC Arena in Queens. We are back home for Genesis next Saturday, September 24th. My favorite gaming system. We've got Penta L0M coming back to take on Low Key. The Briscoes closing in on 200 days as House of Glory Tag Team Champions defend their titles against Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. Charles Mason defends his Crown Jewel Championship in the first ever ladder match in Hog history against Ken Broadway. Main Event takes on the team of Milk Chocolate. And Natalia Markova will defend her House of Glory Women's Championship against the Ultraviolet. So we'll be live on Fight. I'll be on the call with JD from NY. Or you can get tickets at hogwrestling.net. Hopefully, anybody who I don't see at Arthur Ashe this Wednesday, maybe I'll see you in back in Queens on Saturday for the Hog Show. We were wondering who Roman Reigns' next opponent might be and when. He is not scheduled for the Extreme Rules show next month, but they do have another Saudi Arabia show on November 5th. Three pay-per-views that month, Crown Jewel, Full Gear, and Survivor Series. So that's going to be a busy month. Drew McIntyre lost already, so he's done as a title contender for the foreseeable future. But Seth Rollins is still talking about wanting championship gold, and Roman Reigns still has not beaten Seth Rollins. So that story is still there. Kevin Owens has told the Usos that Roman owes him one. AJ Styles, he hasn't been doing much of anything lately. I think he'd make a great challenger, even if just for a one-off. Against Roman Reigns. Braun Strowman just came back. Roman gave him the best matches of his career. None of these men will be challenging Roman Reigns for the Undisputed Championship at Crown Jewel. That spot is going to Logan Paul, who has wrestled a grand total of two matches in his entire life. Just one singles match. That was against The Miz at SummerSlam. The announcement came on Friday that Logan Paul would have a massive announcement on SmackDown. Before he even got to the ring, the word had leaked about a press conference that was set for yesterday in Las Vegas to announce the match, but there was no word on whether it would be a championship match or not. On SmackDown, he was confronted by the Bloodline, all but Roman Reigns. All the other members were there. Paul Heyman said that Logan's brother, Jake, was going to get knocked out next month by Anderson Silva, and the crowd cheered. And at the first mention of him possibly taking the championship from Roman Reigns, the crowd booed. So again, you know, it makes me think of, was it last month, I guess, when Becky Lynch made the comments when she was interviewed on that out-of-character show, and she was talking about having a conversation with Triple H. And Triple H asked her, "Are you happy being a heel?" And she was like, "Oh, yeah, it's fine, it's cool." And he said, "I feel like we're swimming upstream, meaning you shouldn't be a heel, you should be a babyface. And it was dumb to turn you heel in the first place." And he wanted to make her a babyface again, and Becky was all in and said, "Yeah, that sounds great." But I think back to that comment about how it feels like we're swimming upstream. That's how it feels like with Logan Paul every time they send him out there expecting him to be a babyface. Now, to his credit, he went into SummerSlam against The Miz. I was surprised how positive the reaction was to him at SummerSlam. But it's The Miz. If you're going to put him in there with anybody, any kind of heel, and, you know, give him the chance of getting the best possible reaction, you put him in there with the fucking Miz, right? And anyway, it worked out great, and he got a great reaction, and he was very impressive in the ring. But this, on SmackDown Friday night, and the reaction that we got from this crowd, I think is indicative of what we're going to see more of on TV in the weeks to come. If they insist on this guy being a babyface, I think they are swimming upstream. This guy is a natural heel. But anyway, Paul Heyman said that Logan's brother would get knocked out. He's referring to a fight that Jake Paul has on October 29th, which is only about a week before this match here that we're going to be talking about. And the crowd cheered that. But Logan said he's got a way of running his mouth and pissing people off. This all stems from the interview he did with Roman for his Impulsive podcast, which I watched. It was about an hour and 10 minutes or so. The video, it's up online. It's a very good interview. My favorite part was when Logan Paul referred to the Usos' father as Rashiki. Shiki, baby. So you learn something new every day. Rashiki Fatu. But at the end of the interview, after Roman got up off the couch and he left, you know, Logan was talking with his co-hosts. And he said, you know, if you put me in the ring with Roman Reigns right now, I win. And he looked into the camera and he challenged Roman Reigns to a match. So that was the only reason this interview even took place. It was an angle. It was to set up what will now be a match between the two of them. The idea is that in everything he does, he goes for the top dog. In only his second fight, he challenged Floyd Money Mayweather. And he hung with him for the entire fight. Now that was a retired Floyd Mayweather, but he still fought Mayweather. Only his second fight. So now here, in only his second singles match in WWE, he is going for the top dog in the company. And I get it. They're paying this man a lot of money. Whatever the dollar amount is, I am sure that it is a ton of money. They did not sign Logan Paul to a big contract to spend the next 6 months having him work matches against Happy Corbin and Dolph Ziggler. They want a return on their investment. And he's got this huge social media following that they are dying to tap into. 6 million followers on Twitter, 24 million on Instagram, 16 million on TikTok. And look, the interview he did with Roman, which went up less than a week ago, already has over 2 million views. That's more than most videos do on WWE's own YouTube channel, and they have 86 million more subscribers than Logan Paul does. Those are huge numbers. I can see why they want to be in the Logan Paul business. If they want to do Roman Reigns against Logan Paul in Saudi Arabia, I'm okay with that. Some people might be surprised, but I'm fine with them if that's the match they want to do. I would rather it happen there than on a pay-per-view like Survivor Series. Someone like Kevin Owens, for example, if you think it should be Owens against Roman, he's not even traveling to Saudi Arabia for any of these shows. So even if they wanted to, they couldn't do that match anyway. This is hardly the first time they have brought a celebrity in for a big match. They built the entire main event of the very first WrestleMania around Mr. T. They've been doing this kind of thing for longer than a lot of you listening to this right now have been alive. The freak show attractions, they bring in eyeballs, they bring in money. The difference, though, in WWE using Mr. T, or Lawrence Taylor against Bam Bam Bigelow, or Floyd Mayweather against Big Show, or Pat McAfee against Austin Theory, or even Johnny Knoxville against Sami Zayn, which ended up being an entertaining spectacle, we'll call it. I was worried they were going to have the Intercontinental title on the line in that match. Thankfully, they had enough sense to get that title off of him before WrestleMania. But the difference in all of those matches compared to this one is that none of those celebrities were wrestling for the world championship. It was not David Arquette in WCW. And Logan Paul's a hell of a better athlete than David Arquette was, or is. But none of those matches were for the world championship. That part of this is very stupid. There is no defense for that. Roman Reigns has not been pinned since December of 2019. You can build an entire match around that. The drama of maybe Logan Paul will be the first person to pin Roman's shoulders to the mat in almost 3 years. You can build the entire match around that without even needing the title to be on the line. They had a press conference in Las Vegas yesterday with Michael Cole as the MC, introducing the Bloodline first, then Logan Paul, then Triple H came out to speak. I love the fact that Sami Zayn walked out with the Bloodline on stage, even though he won't be on the show because I don't even think he's allowed in the country. But there he was. He was on stage throwing his finger up in the air. The greatest story in all of wrestling right now. They tried to work it like a real press conference, but you know, the champion didn't go on a 20-minute cuss-filled tirade and embarrass Triple H, so I mean, how real could it be? Logan said a lot of the same stuff he said on SmackDown on Friday night. This is what I do. I go for the top guy. I'm ambitious. I'm this, I'm that. He says, you may be the head of the table, but I am the table. He said, I am the table. As soon as he said it, I felt sorry for Matthew and all his mentions on Twitter. But at least we know Logan Paul will make the next episode of Botchamania. Roman, I thought, was great here. Talking about how I approved of Logan Paul coming into WWE and doing his thing. I had no problem with that because it didn't affect Bloodline business. He said, you could even be the third match on any show that I headline. But at Crown Jewel, I'm not going to treat you like the third match on the card. I'm going to smash you. He said, you need to crawl before you can walk. You need to walk before you can run. It is incredible to think about the Roman Reigns that we saw in that promo battle with John Cena 5 years ago, which he talked about on the Impulsive episode. He said he froze up at one point during that promo, and I remember that. You could see his mind go blank. And John Cena, I mean, it's like a shark tasting blood or an animal pouncing on a predator that doesn't see it coming. Cena didn't miss a beat. Remember, he butted in, he goes, oh, take your time. Take your time. With that one comment, he buried this guy 6 feet under. He ethered that man in that promo. That was a very different Roman Reigns than the one we see today. That was a babyface Roman. Boy, you talk about swimming upstream. That was a babyface Roman Reigns who was having his material written by an out-of-touch 70-year-old who was doing this man more harm than good. He thought he was personally taking on Roman Reigns for a while there. He was personally handwriting his promos. He was like Vince McMahon's pet project. Vince McMahon was not trying to intentionally sabotage Roman Reigns, which made it worse that he didn't realize the damage that he was doing. That he was doing more harm than good. Now the shackles are off. This guy's able to go out there and make it his own. He's much more comfortable on the mic. He's much more comfortable in his own skin. There's no corny lines. There's no suffering succotash. There's no blue contact lenses to try to make him look like something out of a fucking J. Crew catalog. Now he's the leading man they always wanted him to be when they handpicked him to be the guy. Remember all those years ago when they told CM Punk, make Roman look strong. He was the guy that they wanted to anoint. It took a while, but now he has finally, gotten comfortable in that spot. All it took was a heel turn. That came 4 years late. Episode 408 of The Sound Off is where I first pitched the idea of putting the WWE title on Roman Reigns and having him and the Usos form a Samoan hit squad called the Roman Empire. Here we are 7 years later. Better late than never. I'm actually glad it happened when it did. Otherwise, we probably don't get Paul Heyman with him as the wise man, and we definitely don't get Sami Zayn as the honorary Us. It all just kind of came together in this perfect storm. Paul Heyman called an end to the press conference. Roman shoved Paul, the other Paul, not Paul Heyman. They tried to treat this like a real press conference that you would see in boxing or MMA. Triple H was working this like he was Dana White. We've seen WWE do press conferences for big events before. I don't want to make it sound like this is the first time they've ever done a press conference, but the way they did this is not something that Vince McMahon was doing. This is hopefully something Triple H decides to do more of, and they don't need big celebrities all the time to do it. They can build up their own talent. But it gives it a big fight feel when they do stuff like this. But this does not have to be for the championship to be a big match that people might be, morbidly curious to tune in for. I don't care how good he is at this stage. I don't care how quickly he's picked this up. He should not be wrestling for the championship after one singles match. It's ridiculous. You want to have Logan Paul challenge Roman Reigns for the title? Have Austin Theory start beefing with Logan Paul. Figure out a way to get Theory to put his Money in the Bank briefcase up for grabs against him. Have Logan Paul win the Money in the Bank contract. Then he can call a press conference, just like he did, and announce that I'm cashing in at Crown Jewel for the title. I want Roman to know that I'm coming for him. I got this contract and I'm not waiting. I want you at Crown Jewel. There you go. At least then you have a logical way of explaining why this guy is getting a championship match so soon after his debut. The man signed a contract with them for multiple pay-per-views heading into next year. They've got him locked in for a while. There is no need for them to be rushing into this. But I'm not against the idea of the match because it is an attraction and Logan Paul can go. He has impressed me so far. More than any other celebrity that they have ever brought in to do this before. And how many of them have signed a contract, right? Usually they bring them in, they have a one-off, or maybe they bring them back for a second match. He's actually signed a contract. He has shown that he is at least somewhat serious about this. So he's impressed me so far. He's not going to go in there and embarrass himself. He's not going to go in there and get gassed out in the first 5 minutes and be sucking wind. We saw what he could do when he was in the ring with The Miz. He looked fine. I think these two are going to have a very good match. A lot better than that awful match we got with Braun Strowman and Tyson Fury at Crown Jewel 3 years ago. How good or bad this ends up being, though, will be decided by the promos between now and then. They've got 7 weeks to sell this thing. Jake Paul tweeted that he may have to show up in Saudi Arabia to support his brother. This is why they're doing this. It'll be huge publicity for them if they can get both Paul brothers to show up. Logan Paul is not winning the championship. The rumor is that he'll be back in the ring for his next boxing fight in January. He's already thinking of the next boxing match. He's not winning the title. He'll put up a hell of a fight. Roman will shine him up real nice. They've got too much invested in Logan for them not to. He'll get cocky again like he did at SummerSlam. He'll want to do some big move, but this time when he comes diving off the top rope, Roman catches him with a spear and he pins him. Makes total sense to me why they would be doing this. It does not need to be for the championship. That is a rare fumble by Triple H. I can't even blame Vince McMahon for this one. This one's on Triple H. Have a little more respect for the talent that you already have instead of gifting title matches to anybody who shows up on your doorstep talking about how many followers they have online. Justin Bieber has over 100 million followers on Twitter. Maybe he can get dibs on Roman at the Royal Rumble. On Tuesday, the WrestleVotes account tweeted the following. The situation with the world titles and Roman Reigns is complex, according to a source. They would like to go into Mania season and WrestleMania itself with two champions, but they also don't want Reigns losing at all prior. I'm told Triple H and company are open to all things creatively here. They painted themselves into a corner. It's their own fault for putting two titles on somebody when they turned around and signed this person to a new deal for fewer dates. That was very dumb. And they did this without any sort of exit strategy for how to get the belts off of him. But that was a Vince McMahon decision, not a Triple H call. So I cannot lay that at Triple H's feet. He has now inherited this and has to figure out a way out of it. But it's not really complicated at all. I kind of laughed when I read that tweet. I said, complicated? It's not complicated at all. I talked about it on the podcast last week with Survivor Series coming up. Now, I love the idea of a War Games match with the Bloodline on one side. But they could also do Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins. November is 10 years since the debut of The Shield. Reigns still has not beaten Rollins. The idea was floated online. Somebody put together this idea for there to be a ladder match of some kind where they each pull down a belt at the same time. Rollins pulls down the WWE title. Reigns pulls down the Universal title. And the decision is then made to split off the titles and let them each keep the belt that they pulled down. So that way, Roman preserves his 700-plus day run with the blue belt, and it protects him from taking a loss. Rollins takes the WWE title back to Monday Night Raw so that when Cody Rhodes comes back, he can win the Royal Rumble, he can go on to challenge Seth for it at WrestleMania, and he can bring their story to a close. Headline Night 1 with Cody and Seth. Headline Night 2 with Roman and The Rock if they can get him, or with whatever else Roman Reigns may end up doing. Knowing them, probably Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar. You know they're going to want to do it. You surely did not believe the tagline going into SummerSlam that this was going to be it between Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. You know we will get Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar again at some point. But it's really not complicated at all. It's the best way to split the titles again, which they're going to have to do if they insist on him not losing at all between now and at least WrestleMania. And even if he goes to WrestleMania and gets that match that they want so badly with The Rock, I don't see The Rock beating Roman Reigns. So he could go on and be undefeated for a hell of a lot longer than just WrestleMania. This can go on indefinitely. And I've seen different ideas pitched, by the way, for what they could do at WrestleMania, where you can have Roman wrestling twice. You have two nights of WrestleMania. I would say, I don't know about the majority, but I would think most people going to WrestleMania, especially if you're flying in for the show from someplace far away, are probably coming in for both nights. But you have people who may only be coming to night one or night two. So maybe let's give them Roman Reigns on both nights. And I've seen ideas pitched to have Roman on night two against The Rock and have... I mean, some of the ideas I've seen the idea to have The Rock wrestle the winner of Roman and Cody Rhodes if they want to do Roman and Cody. Or you can do, you know, Roman defending one belt on night one and the second belt on night two. These are all very dumb ideas. The idea of having Roman Reigns wrestle twice WrestleMania weekend to me is very dumb. It's very dumb. You have the injury risk. What can go wrong will go wrong. The last thing they need to do is have Roman go out there on night one and get hurt before he gets to wrestle The Rock. That would be incredibly stupid. But to have, you know, The Rock meet the champion, the winner of the... I mean, this... No. No, that does not make any sense. You do not want to do that. If they can get The Rock, you build to a Roman and Rock match on night two. It's very simple. The titles do not need to be involved. The Rock does not need to be wrestling for a championship that he is not going to win anyway. This does not have to be complicated. Now, I'm going to talk about NXT later, but Solo Sikoa is the new North American champion. He told Carmelo Hayes, and he told Cameron Grimes months ago, I got next when it came to challenging for the North American title. Remember that? I got next. He said that months ago. He stayed true to his word. He showed up on Tuesday. He took the title. So he'll be going back and forth between NXT and SmackDown. He already defended the title against Madcap Moss on Friday night. Another championship added to the bloodline. The only one now without a title is Sami Zayn. And the only idea I would accept for the 24/7 title, besides torching it, is to have it find its way to Sami so that he can say, now we all have titles. Now we have Sami Zayn as the 24/7 champion in the bloodline. And then when they eventually turn on him and they destroy him, they can destroy the green belt as well. They can have an actual, legitimate storyline reason to write that thing off, because the bloodline is going to destroy it. I like that idea. But the bloodline is in rare company now as one of the very few factions in history where all four members, official members, Sammy is only an honorary member, all four members each have a championship. The Four Horsemen did it. Flair with the big gold, Barry Windham with the U.S. title, and Arn and Tully with the tag belts. Evolution did it with Triple H as the world champion, Randy Orton as the intercontinental champion, and Batista and Ric Flair as the tag team champions. Undisputed Era did it with Adam Cole as the NXT champion, Roderick Strong as the North American champion, and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish as the NXT tag team champions. And now the bloodline. And I think that may be it. I mean, I know the corporation had The Rock as WWF champion. Ken Shamrock had the Intercontinental title. Big Boss Man held the Hardcore title. And then at the same time, it was brief, but Shamrock and Boss Man had the tag team belts as well. But that's still three guys. That's not four men, that's three men. JBL had his cabinet on SmackDown in 2004. He held the WWE title, Orlando Jordan held the U.S. title, and the Bashams held the tag team titles. But I think by the time Jordan won the U.S. title, I believe the Bashams had already lost the tag team belts, so they never held them all at the same time. I mean, there's plenty of trios that have held titles at the same time. Team Angle, The Shield, The New Day, The Hurt Business. But to have four members holding gold all at once is a very rare feat. In this week's Observer, Dave Meltzer claimed that there were definitely talks in the direction of having Bray Wyatt come back to WWE. And he added that at one point talks had stalled, but it was said not to be a dead issue. It was also noted that talks between Wyatt and other companies outside of WWE have also stalled in the past due to his asking price being well above what anybody was willing to pay. The belief is that towards the end of his WWE run, behind really only Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, when you factor in merch money, Bray was one of the highest paid wrestlers in the entire world. And I guess when you're one of the highest paid wrestlers in the entire world, unless you're a big spender and you are blowing through all of your money, I guess you can afford to take your time and sit back and not rush right back into the wrestling business until you're ready to come back. So that's the update on Bray Wyatt, but the reason I bring this up is because there was a segment that took place during one of the commercial breaks during SmackDown on Friday night that has a lot of people talking. And there's a lot of fan cam video, well, not a lot, but there's like a couple of versions of this that people posted on social media. And the arena is darkened, and you see people holding up their phones almost like the Fireflies when Bray Wyatt used to make his entrance. All of a sudden, the song White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane starts to play, which is a song that draws on the imagery from the book Alice in Wonderland, and talking about down the rabbit hole. And so they're playing this song, and it's the isolated vocals. It's Grace Slick's isolated vocals, which makes it sound even more haunting. And then towards the end of the song, in the arena, they start to bring up this red light, which is a red light that we used to see whenever the Fiend would make his entrance. But we've also seen that red light used in the past for Karrion Kross. So that begs the question, does this have anything to do with a potential Bray Wyatt return, or is it tied in more with Karrion Kross, who is on SmackDown? And Karrion Kross used to be the leader of the Rabbit Tribe. Remember the White Rabbit King on Lucha Underground? That was Karrion Kross back in his, you know, his Killer Kross days. So that could be an explanation for this as well. I just find it funny, you know. First we have Jefferson Starship in AEW. Now we have Jefferson Airplane in WWE. And I was just watching an episode the other day of Married with Children with Jefferson Darcy. But if WWE is going to kind of go the AEW route, and Triple H is going to, you know, like Tony Khan, start shelling out some money for actual songs, I'm all for it. I think when you use the right songs in certain situations, it's absolutely worth it to shell out the money and pay for it. What this was about, though, I have no idea. Obviously, this was not a mistake. This was not a commercial for anything. This is not a song they've ever played before, even just for the live crowd. This has to be tied into someone's debut or someone's return. Bray Wyatt would be the logical choice, but we can't rule out the possibility it could be a new song for Karrion Kross. I don't see anything wrong with his existing song, the one that Scarlett sings. I think it's a good song. But if they want to use this song for him, this is a pretty cool song too. Yeah, speaking of music, you know, Triple H is making all of these moves. And there was another report also from The Observer this week that Triple H has some other surprises planned for you know, people that people may not be expecting as far as bringing people back or bringing new people into the company. I have no idea if one of those names is Jim Johnston, but if not, let me put that out there into the universe. I'm sure other people have already beaten me to it. Triple H, if he's in the business of bringing people back, he ought to bring back Jim Johnston, because their music, ever since they lost him, and even CFO's had some good stuff, and then they went away, they disbanded. Their music situation ain't what it used to be. And Jim Johnston, is, as far as we know, he's still available. So I would make a play to try to bring him back in to try to fix this music situation in this company. So whatever those surprises are, I'd like for him to be one of them. But yes, we'll see if they play this music again this week or if they do anything like this on TV. This was off television. Nothing is actually played on television so far. But my first thought was the same thought that I'm sure a lot of you had, that it could be tied into Bray Wyatt, who has had conversations about coming back with the company. Where those conversations are right now, if they're active, if they've died down, that we don't know. But this White Rabbit stuff was not an accident. Not a whole lot new to report on the situation with CM Punk and the Elite. Punk had his tricep surgery because the doctor said that if he did not have it done right away, he would run the risk of the muscle atrophying. That's a 6 to 9 month layoff, regardless of what decision Tony Khan makes on his status with the company. Kenny Omega was over in Japan this week, but not on official AEW business since he is still suspended. But he did reunite with Kota Ibushi while he was there, who is still recovering from the shoulder injury that has kept him out for quite a long time. Aside from Punk, Omega, Matt and Nick Jackson, and Ace Steel, everyone who was initially suspended for the backstage brawl at All Out has been cleared by their investigation. They have been reinstated. That includes Christopher Daniels, Pat Buck, Brandon Cutler, and Michael Nakazawa. They were all said to be there to break things up, but they were suspended until they figured out what their roles were. Wade Keller, on one of his audio shows on the Pro Wrestling Torch website, said that he has heard that we are going to be hearing something soon and that the radio silence around the top names being suspended will be broken as early as this week. Now, I don't know if that means the investigation will be completed and they'll be allowed to speak on it if they want to, or if Tony Khan is going to be making decisions about their future starting this week. But we could hear something about that as early as this week. If I'm Tony Khan, I would not want to distract from my big Grand Slam show in New York this week. So I would not expect any splashy announcements. But I said before, I think Punk is going to be more of a headache than he's worth when he comes back, given all the heat on him and the way he conducted himself. Unless he comes out with some kind of mea culpa and he asks for forgiveness, and I would not expect that out of him, then he needs to go. The Elite should have their EVP title stripped at the very least. You know, Keller also recently said on the Torch website that Matt and Nick Jackson are generally seen as good guys behind the scenes. They're not seen as abrasive personalities. A little passive-aggressive, yes, but they're not seen as assholes. He said people who do not like CM Punk have more negative things to say about Punk than the people who dislike the Bucks have negative things to say about the Bucks. And it's hard for people to imagine Matt and Nick deserving that kind of call out publicly when Punk should have been celebrating a title win at a really good pay-per-view. Also, Colt Cabana made his first public, not really comment, but public reference to the media scrum debacle on his Twitch stream the other night. I think he was playing Fortnite. He was on Twitch. And he said, "That's a fun little tidbit. My brother is the director of Family Guy. Look up his name. He also shares a bank account with my mother." And his brother is Greg Colton. He has directed a bunch of Family Guy episodes. He even won an Emmy Award for one of them back in 2010, which is one more Emmy than Kevin Dunn has.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
That's right. Per The Observer, Kenny Omega's contract is said to be up on January 30th of next year, which is not very far away at all. But Tony Khan has the option of extending it through October since he missed 9 months with all the injuries. Omega is not going anywhere. You know, the Bucks are locked down through January 1st of 2024. Feelers or no feelers to WWE, they're not going anywhere for a while. If it ever came to it, I could totally see Omega and the Bucks signing with WWE. And how crazy would that be for Triple H to have all four EVPs under contract working for him? Punk, I can't see back in WWE. Not because he wouldn't want to go back, but I just don't think Triple H would want to work with him. But I guess he could always be a few big injuries away from changing his mind if they ever got bit badly by the injury bug with their main eventers. You know, big names like Punk are in short supply these days. There aren't very many of them left. One bad sign, if you are CM Punk or the Young Bucks, or any of the Elite, was the Dynamite rating this week. Dynamite on Wednesday drew a shockingly high rating. They have been over a million for the past month now, but they had almost 1.2 million people tuned into the show. 1.175 million overall. Number one on all of basic cable. That was up over 13% from the week before. And it is proof that Punk and the Elite are not needed to draw a strong number. Now, it's only 1 week, but it shows that they are expendable. And AEW is not going to wilt and die just because they don't have CM Punk on television or they don't have the Young Bucks super kicking people. They're going to be just fine. This was their best viewership in a year. Since last year's Grand Slam show, they did their highest demo number, the all-important 18 to 49 demo, since June 1st, which was the night that Punk broke his foot on that stage dive. They can thank the over 50 crowd for the numbers, since they tied their highest number in that category dating back to the debut episode of Dynamite 3 years ago. They're tapping into that NXT audience, the over 50 crowd. Why it was so shocking to me is that you would expect, with all the fallout from the Punk and the Elite stuff, last week's number would be way up due to the curiosity factor, and it really wasn't. It was up a little bit last week, but not much, and the quarter hours the last 2 weeks told a story. You know, they started strong, and then they fell as the night went on last week, and people realized, okay, we're not going to get Punk or the Elite on this show. This week, people tuned in, and they stuck around. They maintained their audience. Jericho against Danielson in the main event was a big draw. But it's not like we didn't see some big matches on TV over the summer. You know, Quake by the Lake, we had Jericho challenging Jon Moxley for the interim title. That was the same night that CM Punk came back. That show didn't even crack a million. Now, I don't remember what the competition was. Maybe there was some big sporting event that night, but they didn't even crack a million people for that show. You know, in the overnight number. You factor in DVR and all that, they've been doing well over a million now for many months. So I'm not sure why Jericho against Danielson all of a sudden would be such a big draw, but I was happy to see it. I would like to see Bryan Danielson walk out of New York City this week as the AEW World Champion. Tony Khan has taken a bad situation. He has tried to make the most out of it. Jon Moxley beat Sammy Guevara on Wednesday to open the show. Danielson got the first win of his career over Chris Jericho to close out the show. I thought they had an even better match than the one they had at All Out. The tournament now comes down to two members of the Blackpool Combat Club. And 1 year later, to the very event that we saw Bryan Danielson make his in-ring AEW debut against Kenny Omega, he is back in the Arthur Ashe Stadium facility to challenge for the World Championship. I hope they give it to him. And he can defend against MJF at Full Gear. There's always the possibility that MJF could foil his win at the end of the show. He's got that poker chip. He can cash that poker chip in anytime he wants to. I think they'll hold off for Full Gear. It should have been MJF taking the title from CM Punk. This is what I said for months. But Punk can't stay healthy, and he embarrassed the company. So he killed what should have been a great story. A great payoff to the CM Punk MJF story was completely fucked by CM Punk. Doesn't change the fact that MJF will be the AEW World Champion very soon. But I would at least give Danielson a couple of months with it before he drops it. The Arthur Ashe show on Wednesday has around 12,000 tickets out so far in that range. That's a lot less than the 19,000 they did in that building last year. But that first show is always going to do better. You know, even still, I would have expected around 15,000. Could they still get there? It's possible. I don't think it's likely. I will be one of those 12,000 plus in the building, so there will be no Dynamite review on Wednesday night. Instead, I'm going to be doing the live review on YouTube Thursday night, and I may go through Rampage spoilers at the end as well, because Rampage is 2 hours this Friday. I cannot go live at midnight. I'm not going live. First going live at midnight on Friday to talk about SmackDown and a taped Rampage. So I think what I may do, I'll do a combo review for Dynamite or Rampage on Thursday. And then anybody who doesn't want spoilers for the Rampage show, they can just tune out at that point or mute the stream until I'm done. I don't have any specific meetup planned right now because I have plans right before the show. I might get to see some of you there, I hope. If those plans change, by the way, I may end up at this Cheap Shots place, I'm not sure, in Queens. But I'll keep you guys posted on Twitter about that. I've not been to an AEW show in a very long time. Besides Moxley against Danielson, this show also has Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland defending the AEW tag team titles against the Acclaimed. I also have to give credit to Swerve and Lee. Their match with the Lucha Bros on Wednesday did the highest number all night, over 1.2 million viewers for their match. That was the peak. So they deserve credit for that number every bit as much as Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson do. That said, they should still drop the belts to the Acclaimed. They didn't do it at All Out. I was okay with that, but only because I thought it would be better for them to save it for New York. Well, guess what? We're in New York this week. That place is going to go apeshit if they win those titles. Toni Storm defends her AEW Interim Women's Championship in a four-way against Athena, Britt Baker, and Serena Deeb. I am not expecting a title change here. Pac defends the All-Atlantic Championship against Orange Cassidy on Wednesday. And I am expecting a title change there. I do think we are going to have a new All-Atlantic champion. I don't think Pac is going to be a double champion anymore after Wednesday. So he'll still have gold. He just will not have that gold anymore. And Claudio Castagnoli defends the Ring of Honor World Championship against Chris Jericho. The match was made on Friday. Jericho says the ROH world title is one of the few that he has never held. He is looking for his 8th world title. I don't think he gets it. That's a pretty loaded lineup. And then Rampage Grand Slam airs on Friday. They have 7 more matches. We've been talking about how inconsequential Rampage has felt. Can't say that this week. 7 more matches on Friday. Eddie Kingston and Sammy Guevara, they're going to have that match. They were originally supposed to have it all out before it got canceled. Sting and Darby Allin take on Brody King and Buddy Matthews in a no disqualification match. This will be only my 3rd time ever seeing Sting wrestle live. I saw him once in TNA 10 years ago against Bully Ray, once in WWE against Triple H, and now once in AEW. And every time you see Sting wrestle live these days, could be your last time seeing Sting wrestle live. So that is very cool. Ricky Starks takes on Powerhouse Hobbs. Rey Fénix battles Jungle Boy. Samoa Joe and Wardlow team up to take on Tony Nese and Josh Woods. Jade Cargill defends her TBS title against Diamante. Hook teams with Action Bronson to take on Matt Menard and Angelo Parker of the Jericho Appreciation Society. And there will be a golden ticket battle royal with the winner receiving a future AEW World Championship match. We just had a ladder match at All Out with the winner getting a future AEW World Championship match. That was 14 days ago. Now we're getting a battle royal with Hangman Page, Lance Archer, Jay Lethal, and Penta. They are they will not be the only men, but they are the only men announced so far. There was an article in Friday's issue of The Hollywood Reporter about Warner Brothers Discovery and its DC Comics franchise, but it was in that article that they had an interesting paragraph. Now, this is very premature, but if it were to happen, it could have a very big impact on the pro wrestling world. Now, remember, they're looking to cut. Warner Brothers Discovery is looking to cut as much as $5 billion. Okay, they've been making, the bloodletting there has been unbelievable. Since the Discovery CEO took over as the head guy there, they're just cutting left and right. Which is why we're seeing so many TV shows and movies get canceled. The story says, given the company's daunting challenges, it has become accepted wisdom at the highest levels of the industry that another deal waits in the wings for Warner Brothers Discovery. For reasons related to the complicated structure of that merger, no negotiations can happen until April of 2024. But at that point, many industry observers believe that Comcast's Brian Roberts will make a long-awaited move looking to combine NBC Universal and Warner Brothers Discovery. And that such a deal, it says, would also face antitrust issues, but it would also give them a viable streaming service because, as one executive put it, obviously, Peacock sucks. Many top industry executives are so convinced a deal will happen that some are pre-mourning an event that may never happen. People feel like it's Comcast for sure, says the head of one company. It's going to be so depressing to lose another major studio. That is after Disney bought Fox. How many mergers can one company have? Now, this is all theoretical, of course, but trying to figure out what this could mean for pro wrestling right now is impossible. I don't see how having both major pro wrestling companies in this country under the same corporate umbrella is a good thing. I don't see that as a positive. What it would mean for each company individually, we just don't know. We don't know. We don't even know when they negotiate their next TV deal if AEW will stay with Warner Brothers Discovery or go somewhere else. The relationship they have with them right now looks to be really positive, but they're cutting costs left and right. And just because things are positive now doesn't mean they won't be in 6 months. It also doesn't mean that somebody doesn't swoop in and say, hey, we want AEW. And Tony Khan says, man, I got to go with them. They're offering me more money. So anything's possible. Maybe they're not even with Warner Discovery anymore in 2024. WWE will very likely still be with NBC Universal. I don't see any reason for them not to be. But it's just, right now, it is impossible to know. But imagine WWE re-upping with NBC Universal. And Tony Khan gets a sweet deal to stay right where he is. And they all end up part of one big dysfunctional corporate family. I can't wait for All Elite Wrestling Entertainment. We've got Excalibur and Corey Graves calling Dynamite, while Jim Ross and Pat McAfee call Monday Night Raw. And JR complains about Raw being 3 hours and telling us every week it's a good thing I'm wearing darks. I'm wearing dark pants. And then every time he pisses himself during the show, McAfee jumps up on the announce desk and yells, Boomer Sooner! I can't wait. A report from Fightful Select says that AEW is bringing its Revolution pay-per-view next year to the famous Cow Palace in San Francisco for the very first time. That is the same Cow Palace where Eddie Guerrero beat Brock Lesnar at No Way Out to win the WWE Championship. Sting pinned Hollywood Hogan in that building at Super Brawl to win the WCW title. Only a few years ago, Kenny Omega beat Cody to retain the IWGP Championship. So a lot of history in that building. And a quick update on Malakai Black. For the first time since getting his conditional release from AEW, he broke his silence last night after his match at the Prestige Wrestling event in Pomona, California. He got on the microphone and addressed the crowd to say, I understand that all of you have questions. What I am doing? Where am I going? In due time, I will answer the majority of these questions. However, for the last 22 years of my life, I have never not once taken a step back and recalibrated my life. I took a chance to look back at the stuff that I've done in the ring, but also the stuff outside the ring. Please allow me a few weeks, maybe a few months, to recalibrate myself. I promise you this is not goodbye. This is just, we'll see each other soon. So that is not a man who is retiring from the ring. There was some speculation that maybe he would leave wrestling behind, which I never bought for a second. He'll take a few months off, and then I expect to see him back on AEW television, which is probably why AEW went and trademarked the House of Black name this week. Well, they want to lock that shit down, just in case, but I think the trio will be whole again by early next year. I don't think Malakai is going anywhere, and whatever it is that he's dealing with, he has to get his head on right. I hope he does that. And hopefully we get to see him back in a few months. Now, a word from our sponsor for this week, BetterHelp. If you want to feel whole again, this is what you need to listen to right now. We all deal with mental health issues of our own. Some are more serious than others. Pro athletes are no different. I saw data that up to 35% of elite athletes, and I'm not talking about Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, suffer from mental health crises of some kind that could result in stress, eating disorders, burnout, or anxiety or depression. More and more of these athletes are speaking out publicly about the importance of mental health. And that's important because it shows that everybody in the world, regardless of who you are or how much money you have or how popular you may be, you are not alone in dealing with these problems. And one way to tackle those problems, I had to work a sports pun in there somehow, is through therapy. And that's where BetterHelp online therapy can help you. I know people who have tried therapy before and they swear by it. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But let me tell you something. It helps to talk to someone. It can help you work through stress, anxiety, depression, all the nasty things that you may be suffering in silence with right now. BetterHelp is a great option if you are thinking about giving therapy a shot. It's convenient, it's affordable, and it's entirely online. You can get matched with a therapist right now just by filling out a brief survey, and you can switch therapists if you need to anytime you want. When you're ready to feel at the top of your mental health game, therapy can help get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. That's BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. Some other news and notes. Last week, I shared with you the story from EC3 about the party at his home a few years ago, with Velveteen Dream allegedly leaving his smartphone in the bathroom to film people pulling out their pricks as they went to relieve themselves. It's been a very eventful few weeks for Velveteen, the Velveteen Nightmare. Between that story, which apparently was an open secret for years, and his recent arrest after assaulting a gym employee and violating his probation as a result. The latest legal update on Dream, per PW Insider, is that he was declared guilty of violating an existing probation when he was arrested back on August 20th. The presiding judge released him on Tuesday, citing that his confinement of 25 days in Seminole County Jail was sufficient punishment. So he has been released. The first thing he did was take to Instagram to refute EC3's comments. He posted a video sitting in his car. I'm not sure if it's the same one that cops observed him snorting cocaine in when he was arrested last year. In the interest of being fair and giving both sides, here is what the Velveteen Dream had to say. I'm trying to help my old man out on a computer and I just type in WWE, right? Tell me why the first thing I see is EC3 has talked to the dirt sheets. I guess since I'm on TMZ now, I'm somebody again. EC3 has gone to the dirt sheet saying, if you haven't seen it, he had a party at his house one night, and if I'm to be correct, this was about 2017 or 2018. I'm not going to tell people who was at this party out of respect for our mutual friends, but one of our mutual friends is a former NXT talent that no longer works for WWE, and the other person is a current Monday Night Raw talent who used to wrestle for NXT. Mike, EC3, you go out here after I gave you the best match of your entire career. I'm tired of people throwing dirt on my name. You throw this dirt on my name saying I tried to record you in your bathroom. Let's be honest, Mike, you are leaving out a lot of details. What type of powder was on the table, Mike? So let's not leave out all the details. The other two people, our mutual friends, were there. I left my phone on your bathroom counter, and because you were not sure of my sexuality at the time because of the character I played on TV, and because we are not friends in real life at all, you tried to accuse me of recording you in your home. So, what did I do? I went to our mutual friend who no longer works for WWE, a former NXT talent, and I showed him my phone and had him go through my photos and videos and my recently deleted, just to prove to you and the other person who was there, who I respect him and he has a job, I'm not going to put him out there. I had him prove to you that I was not recording you. Cocaine is a hell of a drug, Mike. Get your shit together. If anyone would like to go to my friends list and check out who follows me, EC3 is a follower of mine. If you thought that much of me and you couldn't trust me, you definitely would not be following me on social media all these years later. You're pathetic. Control that narrative, asshole. I have to admit, that was a great parting shot. That was the best thing that Velveteen Dream has done probably in the last 3 years. Control that narrative, asshole. I love it. By the way, that 24-date tour that Control Your Narrative announced back in July would be starting in October is now off. That is according to EC3. Once they lost Karrion Kross and Braun Strowman back to WWE, that was pretty much the nail in CYN's coffin. Not a very expensive coffin either, more like a pine box. Dream also wrote on Instagram, a lot of cocaine users still employed, truth be told. So he basically admitted he and a bunch of NXT talents were doing cocaine while on the roster. Color me shocked that you take a bunch of young 20-somethings and stick them in Florida to work and party, that there's going to be cocaine involved. Cocaine is what single-handedly powered the entire 1980s wrestling boom. It's the reason Vince McMahon instituted his very first drug policy, because of how rampant the cocaine use was in the late 80s. It wasn't a steroid policy, it was a cocaine policy. It never really went away. People just got more discreet about it. PW Insider reached out to EC3 for his response, and this was the statement that he issued to them via email. In life, I forgive everyone for everything that has been done to me. I personally have never failed a drug test from any employer, nor been arrested for drug usage, paraphernalia, assault, battery, or inappropriate behavior. My forgiveness includes Patrick Clark for setting up a video recording device in the bathroom of my home. As far as any other accusations and allegations against him, I hope that he finds the help he needs. Winter is coming has a very different meaning when it comes to the Velveteen Dream. You know, even before his most recent arrest, WWE sources had indicated to Fightful that they had no desire to bring Velveteen Dream back. One source even said that it would be a public relations nightmare that the new regime was not interested in. By the time Velveteen Dream stopped appearing on NXT television, he already had a ton of heat in the NXT locker room. And according to Fightful, completely separate of that, he had become what one NXT coach said was a headache and was talked to several times about unusual behavior in general at the Performance Center. So what that unusual behavior was, we don't know. I don't know that I necessarily want to know. But it goes to what I said last week. Even if you take away the accusations of grooming, which really is what killed his career, even if you take that out of the picture, take away the grooming accusations, you know, talking to young boys online, the chances of WWE wanting to bring him back were next to none. He had too much heat on him as it was, too much baggage. Which is too bad, because he's got talent. Nobody is denying that. He's got talent. He could have made a lot of money for himself, for the company. But once you get a rep for that sort of thing, it's very hard to shed that. Very hard to come back from that. It is that time of year. The annual PWI 500 rankings drop this week, which is always sure to make wrestling fans lose their minds. For those who don't know, or are too ignorant to listen when I remind you of this every year, it is a worked list. It is a worked list. There is no big committee. There is no legitimacy to it of any kind. The criteria they use for it was an evaluation period of July 1st of last year to June 30th of this year. That is the cutoff. You need to have a minimum of 10 matches total, and they rank each person by in-ring achievement, including their win-loss record and championships won, their influence on the industry, their technical ability, and their competition, their level of competition. So their success against high-caliber opponents. If you go on an undefeated streak like Bill Goldberg, but you're wrestling people like Luigi Primo, the pizza dough guy, you're not going to be ranked very high. Now, all that being said, I still think it's fun to take a look at this, knowing, you know, taking it for what it is, and see who they picked and where they ranked. So let's run through this year's top 10 ranked male wrestlers in the PWI 500. Not surprisingly, Roman Reigns takes the number one spot this year. No argument there. He is the biggest star in the business today, not named Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar hasn't been able to beat him. So based on this criteria, Brock wouldn't even be in this spot anyway. Everything is built around Roman Reigns and the bloodline. And that is going to continue to be the case well into next year. So no debate on that. Kazuchika Okada is ranked number 2. Again, no argument. Okada is still one of the best in the entire world. CM Punk, who likes to call himself the best in the world. Number 3. So that evaluation period would include his return last year, his matches with Darby Allin, Eddie Kingston, MJF, his title win at Double or Nothing. He was the biggest star that Tony Khan had under contract, even though he did miss the first and last months of the evaluation period. You could certainly make the case that Punk should be in the top 3. Hangman Adam Page is number 4, the highest he'll ever be on this list. Just imagine, if you're Hangman, you see your ranking there. If he had just been ranked one spot above, if you swapped him and Punk, and Punk was number 4 and Page was number 3, oh, the people that would be pitching a shit fit right now. Number 5 is Bobby Lashley. And Bobby Lashley has had a hell of a year. He's had a babyface turn in there. But even before the babyface turn, you know, he was kicking ass on the roster. He got his match that he's wanted for years with Brock Lesnar back at the Royal Rumble. He beat Brock Lesnar. He won back the championship. And then he got hurt. But thankfully, it wasn't anything too serious where they had a cut on him or anything like that. He came back in time for WrestleMania. But he's been on a tear recently. They put the U.S. title on him. You know, by default, he's the most dominant champion they have on Monday Night Raw. I think Lashley being in the top five is well-deserved. Number six is Cody Rhodes, who won the TNT Championship, made a big return at WrestleMania this year, and then beat Seth Rollins three straight times, including with a torn pec at Hell in a Cell. I don't know how you can't argue that Cody doesn't deserve, on a list like this, to be in the top 10, maybe even in the top 5. Maybe you can argue, you know, pull Hangman out of the top 5, put Cody in that spot. Number 7 is Bryan Danielson, who debuted in AEW in September. He had that big match with Kenny Omega at last year's Grand Slam show. They went to a 30-minute draw. And then he couldn't beat Hangman to win the AEW World title. He couldn't beat Jon Moxley, a Revolution. And he couldn't win a Double or Nothing in the Anarchy in the Arena match. Then he got hurt, and he missed the entire final month of the evaluation period. So he's probably lucky to even be this high on the list at all. And I think Danielson is still one of the best in the world. I love Bryan Danielson. I don't know that he necessarily should have even been in this spot, though. I mean, just going based on their own criteria. Number 8 is Vikingo, who works for AAA. Number 9 is Big E. And I like Big E, but him being in this top 10, I think, is questionable. I know that during this evaluation period is when he won the WWE Championship. I know he cashed in Money in the Bank and he won the title, but he had a very lackluster run. And then he missed the last few months of the evaluation period with a broken neck. I don't think he belongs in the top 10. At number 10 is Jonathan Gresham, who is mailing a copy of this list to Tony Khan as we speak. Certified mail. So that's the top 10. Now 11 through 20 is Shingo Takagi, and this is in order, by the way. Shingo Takagi, Jon Moxley, Matt Cardona, Josh Alexander, Hiroshi Tanahashi, MJF, Seth Rollins, Adam Cole, Kenny Omega, and Drew McIntyre. And as I read off those names, there is one very glaring omission from that list. How the hell is Will Ospreay not even in the top 20? He's top 10 easily. They don't even have him in the top 20. They have him down at number 27. Look at some of these names they placed in front of him. Josh Alexander at 14. Moose at 21. AC Mack at 25. Fucking Bron Breakker, one spot ahead of Will Ospreay at number 26. High comedy is what this list is. You'd have to be high to not rank Will Ospreay at least in the top 20. How does that even happen? But then I remind myself, it's a worked list. Even people who recognize that these are worked lists can still work themselves into a shoot. And I have to calm down and say it's not worth getting upset about. But I do think that is completely ridiculous. So anyway, I'm not going to go through the top 50 or 100 or anything like that. That's your top 20 for the PWI 500. Will Ospreay, way down on the list at number 27. Speaking of Bron Breakker, though, that is a perfect segue into the NXT discussion. NXT celebrated the one-year anniversary of its 2.0 relaunch on Tuesday, and I think it spoke volumes about the state of NXT when nobody cared about hardly anything on this show until the final 5 seconds when they showed the new logo. They showed the new logo. That got people talking. In the closing moments of the show, Shawn Michaels voiced over a quick video message saying that NXT has been and will always be about developing the stars of the future. He said NXT is constantly evolving, and even though stars will move on, NXT's message to the fans will still be the same. We are NXT. And they showed the 2.0 paint splatter logo fading away into a new white and gold NXT logo with black trim. It's the new logo, but with a version of the old black and gold color scheme. The actual logo is white with gold trim, which makes me wonder if it's meant to be a fusion of the 2.0 logo and the NXT UK logo, which had white and gold in it. With all the NXT UK talents that have come over to the brand, it would make sense. But more importantly, the 2.0 part of the logo faded away. So would that make this 3.0 now? They're updating NXT. They're updating NXT like Apple updates its iOS. Hopefully it won't be filled with bugs and shitty battery life. Yet another Vince McMahon decision that Triple H is taking the time to fix. He can put a happy face on it publicly whenever he gets asked about it. I wouldn't expect him to go out publicly and shit on his father-in-law, but actions speak louder than words. With every decision he makes, every name he brings back, he is making it clear what he thought of a lot of these decisions that were made. He bit his tongue for a long time. Obviously, he had his health issues as well. That took his eye off the ball. He had to focus on his health and his family. But you know that he had to see so many of these decisions being made, especially as they pertain to NXT. And all he could do is just bite his lip and say nothing. Now he's leaping into action. He's making changes. Now, a lot is being made of the logo thing. I don't want to throw cold water on people, but I'm gonna do that. A lot is being made of the logo thing. Vic Joseph said that the live crowd was still chanting black and gold for 5 or 6 minutes after the show went off the air on Tuesday. I think these people are setting themselves up for disappointment. This is not a return to the black and gold era. The black and gold era of NXT is dead. What this could be, though, is what I thought last year's reboot of NXT should have been. It did not need the kind of radical makeover that they gave it. They torched the entire thing for the insurance money and then used that money to build the Rainbow Room that we see on TV every week. With the bright lights and the bright colors, it looked like a children's show. I mean, I expected the characters from the Firefly Funhouse to start popping up. It looked like one giant Firefly Funhouse. They could have brought back Funhouse Bray to be the general manager of the new NXT. One of the things I always liked about NXT was that it did not look exactly like Raw and SmackDown. Then they brightened it up so much it felt like I was sitting in a doctor's office. A pediatrician's office, to be more specific. They should have kept an even mix of veteran talent and new talents like Bron Breakker, like Carmelo Hayes, Solo Sikoa, the Creed Brothers, Toxic Attraction, Tiffany Stratton. You can have a nice mix of newer acts, newer talent. Instead, they chased a lot of those veterans away or they cut them. Johnny Gargano said thanks but no thanks when they wanted to re-sign him. The smartest man in the world, he turned out to be. Smartest or luckiest, I don't know which. That he waited long enough for Vince McMahon to go away and Triple H took over. Kyle O'Reilly, once they started pairing him up with Von Wagner, remember him and Von Wagner in the fucking woods? Once they started doing that, him and Von Wagner, the most boring man on earth, he was as good as gone. He was counting down the days. There was no chance that Kyle O'Reilly was sticking around after that. Outside of Tommaso Ciampa and maybe one or two others, it was a show full of young, inexperienced people that we did not know. They were throwing so much shit at us all at once just to see what sticks. It made for terrible television. Now they've calmed that down a little bit. They've found their footing with the new format, but that doesn't mean it's a good show. Most weeks, it's not. It's boring. It's not a fun show. NXT used to be the best wrestling show all week. It was a lot of fun to watch, and now it's not. If Triple H wants to bring back some elements of the black and gold era, I think that's great. I'm hearing they may be bringing back the TakeOver name, starting with Halloween Havoc next month. If they're going to bring back, you know, NXT TakeOver, then they have to take those shows on the road. Either pair them up again on the weekends of the main roster pay-per-views or book your own weekend somewhere in a small venue. Because they're not packing 14,000 people into the Barclay Center in Brooklyn with the crew that they have now. Those days are over. You're not getting 14,000 people to pay to see Lash Legend and security guard Hank. But imagine a takeover show at the Hammerstein Ballroom or in a building that size. They must get out of Orlando and get out of that performance center, at least for the takeover shows. That was part of what made those takeover shows so special, was the energy of the crowd. It is no different than WWE doing shows in the Thunderdome or AEW doing all of their shows at Daly's Place. It was nice for a time. It was good that they had a home base and a central location. Eventually, we all grew tired of it, and we couldn't wait for them to get the hell out of there. And I feel the same way about the tie-dye temple. That is a change that I would like to see Triple H make as soon as possible. Now, two more changes I would like to see Triple H make with this latest incarnation of NXT. Better quality wrestling matches, because I actually do watch wrestling for more than just the characters and the silly vignettes. We need characters, and we need vignettes. Look, I grew up on vignettes. We used to get them all the time, on Superstars and Wrestling Challenge. Primetime Wrestling was one big vignette with Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. I didn't even care about the matches. I just wanted to see the two of them. I don't have anything against character development. I don't have anything against vignettes. We can have that, but we need better wrestling. I don't want to see people on TV who have never wrestled a match in front of a live crowd a day in their life. They have no business being on television. I understand NXT is developmental, but a lot of these people do not belong on USA Network. And they're also not doing them any favors by throwing them out to the wolves like that. I actually think it can be very damaging to their development. People shit on them all the time, and it's actually not their fault. It's the company's fault for putting them out there in the first place before they're ready. Then they go online and they read about how this person sucks, and this person has no business being in the ring. Meanwhile, they've had one match, or they've had three matches. You mean to tell me that doesn't fuck with their psyche? Why would you even put them in that position in the first place? Now that they're running live events again in Florida, that's where they should be wrestling. They should be getting their reps in on those Florida loops in front of 200 people, 300 people. Not on national television well before they're ready. It's like throwing raw meat on a plate and saying, here's dinner. At least let the fucking thing cook for a little bit so I don't get food poisoning eating it. This is where the NXT UK stars are going to help out a lot. By adding people like Tyler Bate. They've got J.D. McDonagh now. They've got Ilya Dragunov, who appeared at the tapings. Gallus. Pretty Deadly. Mako Satomura. Now they have a core group of men and women who can work. These are not developmental talents. They are already developed. And they can give you 10 to 15 minutes of wrestling that won't make me embarrassed to be watching the show. One other thing I'd like to see from NXT moving forward is a better synergy with the main roster. I don't mean main roster talents appearing on the show. I mean when the time comes to call these people up to Raw or SmackDown, they won't totally disregard what they did on NXT. Respecting the characters they developed on Tuesdays. Giving them the chance to succeed before giving up on them. Before, you had people get called up and they were buried before they even had a chance to cut their first promo. Because Vince McMahon didn't give a fuck about NXT. Never paid any attention to it. He didn't get any of the characters. He didn't get them. He didn't want to. NXT is Triple H's baby. I trust that he'll treat it with the respect that his father-in-law did not. The best thing that ever happened to NXT was Triple H taking over as the head of creative. More than any cosmetic changes, roster changes, that is the single best thing that ever happened to NXT. And now we need to have a cohesion between the brands that did not exist before. I used to ask the question, why bother? Why bother getting invested in any of these people if 85% of them are doomed to fail? That shouldn't be an issue anymore. Those days should be over. That should be a thing of the past now. We're moving on. This is a new era. These people should not be doomed to fail on day one. If they fail, they should fail of their own accord, not because somebody else made a stupid decision or didn't give them a chance. Those days should be done. Now, they taped two episodes of NXT the next 2 weeks to air on September 20th and September 27th before coming back live on October 4th, likely due to the rebrand. Hopefully that means they're coming back without the rainbow colors. At the second taping, which airs on the 27th, they were taping a match between Tony D'Angelo and Wes Lee, which may or may not air now because D'Angelo was injured and the match had to be stopped. He was sent into the turnbuckles and he went down to the corner with what people in attendance thought was a knee injury. He had to be helped to the back, and there has been no update since, which I think is an ominous sign. But whether they air the match or not, they've occasionally, you know, we've seen matches aired on TV, even though we knew there was an injury and the match had to be stopped. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to cut it. So we'll have to just wait and see on that. But yes, the next 2 weeks of NXT are already in the can. Now, real quick on the anniversary show from Tuesday, which I didn't think was very good. Outside of the open and the close, I didn't think it was very good at all. But the best part of the show, it peaked with the opener. I really enjoyed the cage match with Pretty Deadly against the Creed brothers, two teams who I think could do very well on the main roster. I know the Creeds always get love, and Julius in particular, people think he's a single star in the making. Pretty Deadly, I've come around on them pretty good. I enjoy their act, they're a pretty good team. We had the debut of the Super Diva, Quincy Elliott. This is my first time seeing him. Was not overly impressed, but I saw him for 2 minutes. It was a quick squash. You know, he does Yokozuna's Banzai drop as his finish and some of the Gold Dust mannerisms. And again, I haven't seen any of his level up work. This was my first time seeing him. I need to see more before I could form an opinion. They had fan voting. They were doing the Taboo Tuesday gimmick on this show. One of the things the fans had the right to vote on was who would challenge Carmelo Hayes for the North American Championship. They voted for Wesley to get the match before Wesley got beaten up and taken out of the match backstage by Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. So fuck you and your vote. They ended up going with Solo Sikoa as the surprise contender at the end of the show. I already talked earlier about him winning the North American title. He'll be going back and forth between the main roster and NXT. Carmelo Hayes, look, if they want to call him up, I think he's more than ready for it. I look forward to him. I think he will be an asset to whichever brand he ends up on. I'm still not convinced he's done with NXT. The one thing he needs to be doing, if he's not getting called up, he needs to be next in line to challenge Bron Breakker for the NXT Championship. That's the only acceptable thing for him to be doing down there. Otherwise, get him up. You're just wasting his time. Either put him in there with Braun, challenge for the NXT title, or get him up to Raw or SmackDown, wherever he's needed. Because I think he's one of those guys right now on the NXT show who are ready, have been ready for a main roster call-up. Yeah, do you bring Trick with him? I like their act together. I'd probably bring Trick Williams up with him. But Carmelo Hayes is going to do very well, I think, wherever he lands. So let's get to some of your mailbag questions here and get the hell out of here. You can always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We got Shamar from Raleigh, North Carolina. What about this idea? You have Kevin Owens win the briefcase from Theory at Survivor Series because it seems like he is going to fail whenever he cashes in. You have Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins split the championships at WrestleMania. And then you have Owens cash in on Roman with the help from Sammy to end the show. It splits the titles and you have a great conclusion to the Roman Owes Me One storyline. As far as the tag titles, you build a DIY reunion and they take the titles off of the Usos. That is not at all how I would do it, although I'm totally in favor of a DIY reunion. I don't see it happening anytime soon, but the only team I want to see take those titles off the Usos is Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So whatever their payoff is going to be to this whole Kevin Owens, you owe me one thing, it's not going to be WrestleMania. It's not going to be WrestleMania. That should be saved for Cody Rhodes. Whether it's Cody and Roman or Cody and Seth, I would not be doing Roman and Seth at Mania and doing all this other nonsense. If you're going to do stuff like that, save it for before Mania. Have Mania locked in already. Roman and Seth, if it's going to be done, should be either Survivor Series or the Rumble. I would not be doing that at WrestleMania. Dylan from Toronto. I want to start off by saying I agree with your opinion that Darby Allin is not being buried. That's not the term I would use. However, I do admit that I'm starting to get a little concerned for Darby. He really does lose a lot. I really can't remember the last big singles feud that he won. Was it Cody? Has it been that long? It feels like he can only win with Sting's help, which is not what you want with one of your stars of the future. Sting cannot be around forever. Well, tell that to Sting. Darby is going to have to win some singles matches against important opponents. With the Punk and Elite drama going on, Tony Khan needs his pillars to step up, but I'm starting to fear that Darby Allin is dangerously close to the Dolph Ziggler-Bray Wyatt role, as the eater of pins in big feuds rather than the megastar I believe he could be. What do you think about the Darby Allin situation? I agree that Tony Khan should be more protective of Darby as a draw. He lost to Sammy Guevara in the world title tournament, but don't forget, he beat Brody King in the coffin match last month. That was a pretty good match, too. I love that finish. So he did get the win over Brody King, and he got the pin on Malakai Black in the trios match at All Out, even though he had help from Sting. Sting spit the mist in Malakai's eyes, and then Darby hit the Last Supper and got the win. I would be more protective of Darby, though. And I, you know, in a way, I wonder if they kind of look at him and go, well, this guy goes in there, he's out of his mind, he's always taking risks and these crazy bumps, and, you know, ends up losing because of it, so maybe that protects him in a way. People know he's a risk taker. No, I mean, at the end of the day, you need to protect your stars with the booking. The booking is the most important thing. Darby Allin does not get buried by losing one or two matches. But yes, Tony Khan should be very careful and should be very protective when it comes to people like Darby, when it comes to people like Jungle Boy. These younger talents that he has, who I think could be built up for something far bigger in the future. They need to be protected. Bryan Danielson can go out there, and I think Danielson loses more than he should. But Bryan Danielson is a made guy. He's already a headline guy. You know, he's Teflon in many ways. So he can absorb a whole bunch of losses, more than someone like a Jungle Boy or a Darby Allin could. They're not as established as he is. Anthony from Philadelphia, NXT 2.0 might be over. How would you feel if Triple H moves the black and gold back to Wednesdays while AEW is still weakened by controversy? Oh, I don't know. Almost 1.2 million viewers on Wednesday. That doesn't seem very weakened to me. No, I think that would be very dumb. It would be very dumb to move the show back into a competitive slot that they already lost. Why would it be any different? AEW kicked NXT's ass on most weeks. Why would you or WWE think that now, all of a sudden, it would be any different? Part of the reason that they were moved and part of the reason they blew the whole fucking thing up is because the tail end of the black and gold was getting its ass kicked. When AEW was beating them every week or almost every week, that was still the black and gold. So why would you think any kind of reverting back to those days, it would be any different? Look at all the stars they've lost. They wouldn't even have those names. And they were still losing. So I think that would be the dumbest thing that Triple H could possibly do. They already got bounced out of that spot once before. It's not their decision to make anyway. I think USA is airing NHL games on Wednesdays. Michael from Long Island, what do you think about the idea of a new Bray Wyatt family forming to go up against the Bloodline? A Wyatt family against the Bloodline. If it was the old Wyatt family, that'd be pretty good. I don't want to see a new Wyatt family. To me, there's only one Wyatt family. You'll never be able to replicate what they had with Bray and Harper and Rowan. You know, later on they added Strowman, but I'm talking about the original trio. If Bray's going to come back, I think he needs to just do something different. I don't think going back and having a Wyatt family is something that they should be doing. Luis from the Bronx, if AEW does not announce something soon about a Ring of Honor TV show, should they turn Rampage into an ROH show? It's already more or less a Ring of Honor show to begin with. I mean, look at all the Ring of Honor talent that's on there. We just had another Ring of Honor title match with Samoa Joe defending his TV title on Friday. But no, TNT is not paying for a Ring of Honor television show on Friday nights. If they wanted to be in the Ring of Honor business, they would already have a deal for a third show. But Tony Khan has to do something. They have two YouTube shows, Dark and Dark Elevation. Just give one of those to Ring of Honor and air it on YouTube until they can figure out the TV situation. You don't need Dark and Dark Elevation. Dark is fine. Take Dark Elevation on Monday nights, turn it into a Ring of Honor show. There's no reason they can't put it on YouTube. Tay from DC, can you explain how popular Jeff Hardy was in his prime around 2007 to 2009? I believe he was the best wrestler in the world around that time, or at least the most popular. The guy put on some of the best matches, not just of his career, but in all of wrestling, in my opinion. Had his world title run and was selling merch in the range of John Cena. Yeah, I would not say Jeff Hardy was one of the best wrestlers in the world. He was one of the most popular for sure, at least in WWE. And yeah, I mean, his popularity in terms of merch was, if not rivaling, there might have been a period there where he was even beating John Cena. There was something about Jeff during that run. He just really took off, and the people really wanted to see him win that championship. He did. He only held it for a month. You know, given his track record, that probably was the safe move to make. But he was very, very over. I was at some of those shows where Jeff Hardy was, you know, on the card. I was at the Royal Rumble where he challenged Randy Orton for the world championship, you know, at Madison Square Garden. He was mega over during that period. The problem is he was his own worst enemy. It was only a couple of months after that Royal Rumble match when he lost to Orton that he got popped for some kind of violation and he was suspended. Now imagine if they would have put the title on him. I wanted them to put the title on him. Had they done that, they would have been fucked. You can't trust somebody like that. John Cena never caused any problems. He never created any waves. He was the model employee for Vince McMahon. He really was. They knew that he would do whatever they wanted him to do. He was the perfect face of the company. He could do all the media stuff. He had this great image. He didn't get into trouble. You never heard about him getting suspended or getting into fights, doing any kind of unsavory stuff, getting, you know, pulled over by the cops. Jeff Hardy was his own worst enemy. The only reason Jeff Hardy didn't have more success at the top of WWE or a longer title run is because of Jeff Hardy. Julius from the Bronx. If Vince McMahon decided to bring Jeff Jarrett back in 2001 after purchasing WCW, would there have been a TNA or something similar? And would there have been an AJ Styles? Yes, there would have been there would not have been a TNA. There would have been something similar for sure. If it wasn't TNA, it would have been something else. And Ring of Honor popped up only a few months before TNA did, like within 2 months of each other. So you already had Ring of Honor that had started up, but if it wasn't TNA, it would have been something else. And would there have been an AJ Styles? Yes, absolutely there would have been an AJ Styles. I don't know where he would have ended up. Ring of Honor. Probably Ring of Honor. Maybe he would have gone to Japan a lot sooner than he did. AJ was too good to not, you know, take off as a big star somewhere. His star would have shined for someone else, if not for Dixie Carter. He was too good not to find success in wrestling. Carlos from Gaithersburg. Do you ever envision Dave Bautista winning an Oscar, or at least getting a nod for acting or Best Picture? The man can legit act and seems to take his craft very seriously. You were actually the one to point or put me onto his film career and ability during one of your podcast episodes a few years ago. With the Academy needing more viewers and constantly looking to stay relevant, and with the expanded criterias for streamed movies, I could legitimately envision him finding himself at the show one day. Not saying he's Gary Oldman, just saying he's pretty talented. If not him, who do you think would be the first wrestler turned actor to win an Academy Award? Or who do you think should have gotten a nod for a performance, in your opinion? Yeah, I mean, Batista can act. He can. I remember talking about that here on the show. I watched one of his movies. I'm trying to remember if it was Bushwick. It was one of these like low-level, low-budget movies, but I was very impressed by him. He's got more range than a lot of wrestlers turned actors that I've seen. I don't know about winning one, but could I see him getting a nomination one day, an Oscar nomination? Absolutely. I didn't see his scene in the Blade Runner movie that came out a few years ago. I know it was a short part, maybe 10 minutes, but I heard really good things about him in that movie. You know, I can't think of a role that a wrestler had that should have won an Oscar. I mean, unless you think Mickey Rourke should have won the Oscar for The Wrestler. Mickey Rourke himself was not a wrestler. But I mean, aside from that, I can't think of any. But if there was a category for best fight scene, it should have gone to Roddy Piper and Keith David. Piper and Andre the Giant. Those are my two favorite wrestler movie roles ever, for They Live and The Princess Bride. They may never win an award, but those are my two favorites. Again, if you have questions, keep them coming. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. I love hearing from all of you. Quick reminder, there will be no live Monday Night Raw stream tomorrow night. There will be no Monday Night Raw review. At least not until next Sunday, because I am going to be unavailable. There will be no Dynamite review on Wednesday, because I will be at the show. So it's going to be kind of hard for me to review Dynamite when I'm at Dynamite. And given that Rampage is 2 hours, I'm probably not getting home until 1 o'clock in the morning. So what we'll do is I will go live the next night. You just have to wait an extra 24 hours. Live on Thursday night, figure probably around 8 p.m. Eastern. And we'll go live for my in-person perspective on AEW Dynamite. We'll have a new world champion crown. There'll be a lot to talk about. And I'll go through the Rampage spoilers at the very end as well. We'll do SmackDown only on Friday night, and then back here for episode 775 next Sunday, and then back on a normal schedule. So, a lot going on. Hopefully you will choose me for your coverage and stick with me as you have done all summer long. Summer, of course, is just about over. Doesn't feel like it. It's going to be 87 here tomorrow. But we are heading into the fall season, which also means we are heading into Halloween. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great week. Again, if you are down south, if you are in Puerto Rico, please stay safe. I know it's getting kind of scary down there. I will be back here with you for 775 next Sunday. So until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Can you imagine if Logan Paul goes to Saudi Arabia and beats Roman Reigns to become the champion? Drew McIntyre lost in Cardiff in front of 62,000 people. He goes to Cardiff, right? His countrymen, I'm going to be in the UK, and I got broken dreams back, and I got my sword, and I got my people, and I got my family, and I got my dog. After all that buildup, and he loses. And then a couple of months later, Logan fucking Paul goes in there and wins the championship. Oh my god. Now I kind of want it to happen just to see the reaction. I'd like to think Triple H is smarter than that, but we are getting Logan Paul and Roman Reigns for the championship. I'm not so sure about that.
The Solomonster sounds off each week, bursting with content, podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster sounds off.